Okay, folks, welcome to the latest edition, the latest chapter, the latest great adventure from Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, the rocket writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Miss Jones, I have to say, what a pleasure it is to be talking to you today. One reason being that hopefully, the heat has now receded. Although, as I talk to you, and I'm just on the edge of my roof garden at my office in Surrey, I still find the humidity gets to me and it gives me headaches. Do you have that problem?
Yeah, I really do. I was in town yesterday for the birthdays of two of my children, born on the 22nd and the 23rd of August. So we always have an extensive family lunch.
That's amazing. Yeah. How many years apart is that?
Exactly 10 years and one day.
Golly, amazing. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so Mia was 35. Well, she's 35 today, actually. And, and Henry, 25 yesterday.
Oh, is he back from Italy then, Henry?
Well, he's back from his latest cruise in the Baltic.
Oh.
And he's going to be playing the Beast again. He's typecast at the age of 25. Yep. He's going to be the Beast in Beauty and the Beast Panto in Ascot this year.
Wow.
So everybody snap up your tickets for Beauty and the Beast in Ascot.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a great day, but it was incredibly muggy in town yesterday. Yeah. And it's just that thing of sweat pouring off you the whole time. You feel like you need about four showers a day.
Well, I agree. It's like it used to be in New York. You know, in New York. Excuse me. When you came out of a building in New York in the summer, your shirt or your blouse literally was wet within sort of 15 seconds. That's how hot the. But at least in New York, the reason is because they've got so many skyscrapers there, they say it kind of soaks up the heat. You know, it gets up to like 100 degrees in Manhattan in the summer. And they're like those heaters they used to have where the building blocks heat up and then throw out heat later on. And it's so hot. Anyway, look, what am I talking about? I don't know. But it's hopefully it's going to get cooler. Now, Ms. Jones, there's lots of strikes going on at the moment, which inconvenience everybody. Railway strikes. There's a strike at Felixstowe, which people tell me probably won't impound on us all until Christmas when you're trying to buy some presents from China or the Far East and they don't come. But another strike that's going on is barristers. Am I the only one who thinks, well, I couldn't care less because, you know, barristers are rich people who earn a lot of money, and if the legal process comes to a halt, as I'm not involved in any legal process, why should you worry?
I think we should all worry about it because all the criminal cases outstanding at the moment will not currently go ahead.
My God.
So families seeking justice, victims of crime, criminals themselves, you know, all of this will be parked and nothing will proceed. So the whole legal process will be set back a couple of years.
A couple of years?
We're predicting at the moment,
it's only a few days they're going to be on strike, isn't it?
No, it isn't. It's indefinitely.
Oh.
And so it's going to cause untold damage. Really, you know how long we have to wait for trials, even major criminal trials like Wayne Cousins, the police officer who murdered Sarah Everard, wasn't it?
He's facing some more charges, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes, and these things are pending for months on end. Yep. It looks as though now even criminal cases will be pending for years on end. I think anything that disrupts the status quo. Mm. Anything that prevents us from living our normal lives, it is disruptive, isn't it? It's going to affect us all, whether we think it is or not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The world's falling apart at the moment. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll talk about the world falling apart. We'll talk about much, much nicer and better things. Did you see an amazing statistic yesterday? Somebody put out a tweet showing that the first ever picture of the four Beatles together, because of course Ringo came to join the group late in the day, was on in 1962 on what's the date here, on August the 22nd, and the last picture ever taken of the Beatles, the four of them together, was on August the 22nd, 1969, exactly 7 years later. That is an incredible statistic because it puts into perspective just how short the life of the Beatles was.
Exactly, those 7 brief years during which they conquered the world and became the greatest musicians of all time. Singularly and collectively, you know, the influence of John Lennon continues, the influence of George Harrison continues. Yes. Paul McCartney's still out there doing it, has had a 50-year career beyond the brief 7 years of the Beatles. Mm. These guys are never going away. Yeah. And I think that those two pictures really illustrated that because they stand as bookends, but they also serve as, you know, the ending of something and the beginning of something else.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a cycle that is never going to end.
Honestly, absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it when I looked at that and I thought, no, it can't be true. 1958, 1959. But of course, that was all in Hamburg and it was a different makeup of the band and all that kind of stuff. So just absolutely quite astonishing. And the quote I always love from John Lennon, I don't know when he said this or where, he said, look, the thing is, we were just a band that got together and made it very, very big. What an understatement, eh?
Yeah, of course they wouldn't have understood it themselves. You know, they were not the most intellectual characters, you'd have to say.
Oh, I think they were. I think
not academically, not formally and academically.
Yeah, okay.
But they had an intelligence that went very deep.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I you know, if ever I would nominate a human being who, to me, could have been the second coming, i.e. the rebirth of Jesus Christ, it would have to be John Lennon, because he seemed to have an absolutely cogent view on everything, and he seemed to influence world affairs. You know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. He was largely responsible for the end of the Vietnam War because of the publicity that he gave to it. I think he was responsible for the Berlin Wall coming down. But look, we've spoken about this before, so I won't go on about it. Talking about pop stars, have you ever come across Sean Ryder from a group called the Happy Mondays?
Yeah, he's a strange one, actually. kind of like a walrus, I suppose. A big, thuggish guy who's quite unapproachable and impenetrable to a large extent. Yeah. But he's gone through some sadness recently, hasn't he? Because his brother died quite strange circumstances as well. They don't seem to have got to the bottom of it.
Oh, that's interesting. The reason I ask is because I've just noticed that he's 60 years of age as we're recording this podcast. So I looked him up and he's got a very interesting past. He's from Lancashire. He was working on a building site from the age of 13. He didn't learn to read or write until he was 28. He was addicted to heroin for 20 years, causing the loss of his teeth, and said cycling, that was pedalling from 8 a.m. until 11 p.m. every day for months, helped him get clean. I mean, that's quite a complicated man, isn't it?
That is a very complicated man, but I don't see how anybody could spend that long in the saddle day after day after day without causing all kinds of other problems, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I totally agree.
But it is a family show.
It is a family show. Now then, Miss Jones, I want to talk to you about the other Miss Jones, and this is Liz Jones, okay? We've spoken of her before. She writes a column in You Magazine, which comes out with the Mail on Sunday every week, and she's been detailing in recent weeks a romance with a rock star. But, of course, the rock star remains anonymous. Now, I wouldn't doubt Miss Jones, that's Liz Jones, for 1 minute, but I don't know of any rock star who dates women age 60, which Liz Jones is. So what's going on here, do you think?
Well, that comment is quite ageist.
It is ageist, I agree, but
I do think it's true.
It's factual, that's what I'm saying. It's just factual, yeah.
What we know, or what we think we know, is that this is a composite character. That, in other words, this rock star doesn't really exist. There were rumours for some years that it was Jim Kerr, the frontman of Simple Minds. Mm-hmm. But she's never been able to explain why they've never been seen in public together, why they've never been photographed together. And there's no actual proof that they've ever dated. And he's actually denied it. Mm. He's gone on record. Mm. I mean, that means nothing because people deny stuff all the time. But I don't think it's him. And I think, with the greatest respect to Liz Jones, a fellow writer, you know, and a fellow toiler in the vineyard, he's a very pleasant person to meet and hang out with. I don't think this person exists. And it's been rumoured for years that he's made up. You know, we know Liz Jones for her very frank confessional writing. She's sometimes very harsh and critical of the people in her life. Really? So her lovers don't stick around very long because she always criticised them in her column, mm-hmm. also members of her family and so on. I think she's veering towards a state of TMI, as in too much information about her sex life and her bodily functions and her waxing
yes.
and all this kind of thing.
Yes.
Do we really need to know that much?
Mm.
About how she maintains herself, as it were. Mm. She's obsessed with animals. We know that. She writes about her animals. It reads to me lately like a woman on the brink of somebody who thinks in her mind that she's still about to be 40, not somebody who's on the threshold of old age.
Mm. Well,
she's sort of kidding herself that she's a much younger woman.
Well, you see, I admire your candour in what you're saying there, but you and Miss Jones are friends. I mean, you have lunch together and all that. What do you think she'll feel when she hears you talking about her like this?
I think she'd probably deep down agree,
to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, she is a woman in her 60s, and there is a certain... There's a time, isn't there, to put away childish things, as they say, and to face up to the fact that you are at a certain point in your life, a point of no return. And we all reach that. Mm.
Well,
it's about admitting who we are to ourselves and to stop kidding ourselves, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I suppose you're right, although Joan Collins probably wouldn't agree with you. Jim Kerr that you mentioned, I know Jim Kerr, sort of, because I think I've told you this before. He was in the same class in school in Glasgow as my great mate Alan Brazil. One of them went on to become a world-famous pop star. The other one went on to play for Manchester United and Scotland at football. So that was quite a school class, you know what I mean? The other guy who's the, I think he might be the bass player in Simple Minds, was he was also in the class as well. He was Jim Kerr's big mate. But anyway, look, that's probably for another day. Now,
you know, I must tell you, Mr. Taverner and I were massive Simple Minds fans in our youth during the 80s.
Right.
And we used to go and see them as often as we could. And we both had a favourite song of theirs, which was Don't You Forget About Me.
Don't
the classic
you,
Simple Minds song.
Don't
and
want me.
Yeah, I hope he's listening to this because whenever I hear Simple Minds, comes on the radio, whatever. Mm. I always think of Roger Taverner.
Is it Charlie Burchill, the bass player?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Don't you want me, baby?
No, that's not the same band.
Okay. But they brought their guitars into the studio and started...
That was the Human League, I'm sure.
Oh, that was the Human League, I think.
I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Oh, right, okay, that's
when I found it. Yeah, that's the Human League.
But I know the song you mean. Talk about women who maybe don't act their age or act their position. What do you think of the Finnish Prime Minister, the lady who now has to take a drugs test because her behaviour was so extraordinary in a video dancing at a party privately, people thought she must be on drugs. She's 38 years of age and she's the Prime Minister of Finland. I do not think that people who lead countries should act like that.
Well, we've all seen our own prime ministers dancing at parties, haven't we?
Well, he's on his way
including
out.
Including Theresa May.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Dancing at parties, Tony Blair dancing at parties.
Yeah, I
think it's not that unusual to see a head of state letting their hair down.
But it was extraordinary.
The shock horror level is because she's female.
No, I don't think so. I think it was because she was so exuberant, you know what I mean, and so physical and all that kind of stuff. I think that's...
Well, good for her. She's 38. Yeah. I mean, any other 38-year-old in any other walk of life
yes.
is allowed to get up and have a dance at a party and nobody bats an eye.
Yeah, well... You may well be right. Now, Miss Jones, I know you're not a big TV viewer per se, but have you got involved in the discussion, the debate, whatever you want to call it, about a programme that's on TV at the moment called Marriage, starring Sean Bean and a lady called Nicola somebody, a great actress, which, and the debate is all about, it's so normal and so dull and so boring, it's been hailed as a masterpiece because it according to the critics who love it, it actually reflects what real marriages are about. Dull, boring, pedestrian, repetitive day to day, and there's nothing exciting about it. I mean, I can't make it out. I've watched one episode, and I'd rather watch grass grow.
I'm with you. I watched an episode because I read all the furore about it and thought, oh, well, I've got to see what's going on here. And I thought, classic Emperor's New Clothes. It's drivel.
Yeah.
We don't want to watch dire, pointless, no story, no action dreariness, do we?
No.
We want plot. We want dialogue. We want characters to whom things happen, who make things happen.
Yeah, I agree.
These two drips just sit there moaning and, you know, not living. They seem to be sub-existing on some level.
I agree. That's a great description.
As you say, watch grass growing, watch paint dry. I'd rather do anything than watch a second episode.
No, I totally agree. I think there's four episodes. I watched the first one because I thought, well, Sean Bean, and I think Sean Bean's a great actor. He was in...
He's just so unappealing.
Yeah, I totally agree. The last one he did on TV was called Time, and that was about a bloke, a middle-aged bloke who had too much to drink, knocked a cyclist down, driving his car home, ended up in prison with all the horrors that, you know, if you're middle class and you've never been in trouble in all your previous life, the horrors of jail hit you very badly. And it was absolutely outstanding. And he was outstanding as the, you know, the guy who was shocked by the system and the way it brutalizes people and all that. And of course, most famously, he was in Sharp, which was the, you know, the soldier from the Napoleonic Wars. And before that, Lady Chatterley's Lover. So everything I've seen him in. So, oh, he was in a James Bond film as well, wasn't he? He was 008. That's right. 008 in a James Bond film.
008. Yeah. He's never going to get 007 after this. I tell you what, all his sex appeal has gone down the toilet as a result of this. He's just this gormless bloke. In the episode I saw, he went to the leisure centre and he was chatting to the receptionist in a way that she felt so uncomfortable. She thought he was coming on to her and she had to disappear into the back room and take some deep breaths. And he was saying inappropriate things, probably without realising he was making inappropriate remarks. But he made this young girl feel so uncomfortable that she had to disappear. And you just think, oh my God, you know, you're coming across as a dirty old man. Which, are we saying that all men beyond middle age, on the threshold of old age, are we saying that they all become dirty old men in the presence of young women?
No, I totally agree.
You've got to keep your distance. You know this because you're of that same age group. You're a very respectful person to people of all kinds, men, women, dogs, children, everything. No, but you are. I've been in your company many, many times and you don't behave inappropriately. But this guy is being portrayed as a great actor for behaving inappropriately all over the place. I think it's a joke. I think actually whoever wrote this, whoever produced this, whoever directed this and whoever commissioned this are all taking the piss out of us.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Excuse me. Got a frog in my throat. The other thing is, surely when these actors and actresses get the scripts, they read through it, and don't they just say, I can't see anything in this, I'm not doing it, it's not going to do my reputation any good to play this character who hasn't got even one redeeming feature. I just don't get it. I don't know why they just don't turn it
up. I think what they say these days is, I desperately need the money and I'll do anything.
Maybe. Well, there you go. That's actors and actresses for you. One thing that's getting my goat at the moment, Miss Jones, because we're...
Oh, you still have a goat?
Yes, I still have a goat.
You got a goat?
Got a goat. Because we're all subject now to inflationary pressures and all that kind of stuff, and you know, the old council tax bills come in, all that kind of stuff. Did you realise that one third of your council tax bill actually goes to paying the gold-plated pensions of the people who work at the council, who fill the forms out and send them to you?
No, I bloody didn't, and that's really annoying.
It is very annoying, because gold-plated pensions are standard in the public sector if you work in the civil service or things like that, whereas people who work in the private sector, like you and me, have never seen a pension for years, and even if we did, it wouldn't be gold-plated. And I think it's very unfair that, you know, in the public sector, I'm going to have a whinge now, right? You've more or less got a job for life, and you're not going to be made redundant. You're guaranteed 9 to 5, 5 days a week, very comfortable life. And the deal used to be that you would settle for probably a lower remuneration than those in the private sector, because those in the private sector were working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, all that kind of stuff, go-getters and all that. Whereas you took a backward step and said, well, I'll provide a public service on a lower salary, but I'll get a pension at the end of it. The whole thing now has turned on its head. Since the Gordon Brown days, when Gordon Brown decided to inflate the workforce in the public sector and to attract more people, he put up the wages and gave them these gold-plated pensions. One third of the population now are taking like huge amounts of money from you and me, who are still working hard every day to try and put food on the table.
Makes me sick. This absolutely makes me sick. Yeah. I was listening to a radio bulletin yesterday in the car about people who, even in August, it's not even autumn or winter yet, even in August, are using candles rather than putting on their electric lights in the evening. Yeah. They're using candles to light their homes. Yeah. So in some cases, elderly people, pensioners who maybe their eyesight isn't what it once was, who are maybe not steady on their feet. This is going to lead to house fires up and down the country because people are so terrified of using electricity. And then we're talking about gold-plated pensions. Yeah. Something has gone horribly awry.
Oh, I totally agree. I think the country's in a terrible, terrible mess, honestly. And I don't know who on earth's going to clear it up. You know, I don't want to hark back to quotes, the good old days and all that. But when Mrs. Thatcher came in 79, the country was on the brink of bankruptcy and ruin. We'd have ended up like Greece if Mrs. Thatcher hadn't introduced a whole new way of running things. And, you know, she dealt with taxation. She dealt with the strength of trade unions, all that kind of stuff. We've got all that again now. But I cannot see anybody suddenly riding over the horizon on a white charger carrying a flag and a lance. Who's going to save us this time? I think we're doomed.
Who's out there, do we think, that could, you know, make a difference, who could turn things around? I also listened to an interview with Rishi Sunak, conducted by Vanessa Feltz, who we now know has left the BBC because she's gone for a huge amount of money to Talk TV.
We don't know, actually, she's gone to Talk TV yet, but that is the...
I read it in the mail, so it must be true.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, today. She was interviewing him. She conducted a very good interview with him, I thought. But listening to him, he doesn't seem to have any real fantastic ideas to turn things around. It just sounds as though it's going to be more of the same. As for Liz Truss, I can't believe anything that comes out of her mouth.
Yeah.
So when you say we are doomed, I'm beginning to think we absolutely are. Yeah. Who is going to come along and save us?
I don't know. Keir Starmer's not the guy, is he?
Because no, absolutely not. No.
I can't see even a spark of initiative in Mr. Starmer.
No. There must be somebody in the wings. There must be somebody out
hopefully,
there. He's just biding their time.
Yeah, maybe...
thinking, any minute now, you know, I'm going
to
strike.
Yeah, the problem is that it could take another 5 years for that person to emerge, by which
time
we might literally have gone completely bankrupt, but there we are. Look, just getting back to pop stars for a minute, I read a piece which I felt was very poignant. Liam Gallagher was expelled from school age 16, but the Oasis rocker is nevertheless convinced his newly graduated daughter owes her brains to him. Molly Moorish Gallagher, 24, graduated from Goldsmiths University of London. But read further down the story, and it says that they didn't actually get to know each other until 2019. So does that mean he ignored this poor girl for most of her... you know, teenage life?
Well, of course, because he put it around and he didn't stick around. You know, he went out there having one-night stands with women all over the place and getting girls pregnant and then buggering off and doing absolutely nothing to support these poor women. Mm. So the mother was a lead singer of a band called Kill City, Lisa Moorish, which is why Molly Moorish bears her name and not his.
Right.
He had a brief fling with her and this child was born. He had nothing to do with her. Mm. He was married to Patsy Kensit at the time.
Oh, blimey.
And
who, of course, was married to Jim Kerr, who we've already spoken about.
Exactly, round and round they go. Yeah, I mean, this is how complicated it is.
Yeah.
I think Molly's only really in the news because she has a famous footballer boyfriend, doesn't she? Is it Nathaniel Phillips?
Oh, I don't
plays for Liverpool, I think.
I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know.
I think that's why she's kind of in the news, because she's a model, she's pretty, and she's dated a, you know, a footballer, so all of that. And then she turns out to be Liam Gallagher's biological child, as they say. I mean, you can't pick up with an adult and say, oh, I'm your dad. You can be their father, their biological father, but you haven't been there to bring them up. So you are not their dad.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying there. It's very difficult for me because I've never been a parent. So, excuse me. Oh, God, I've got a frog in my throat. I've always done it from a sort of uncle's perspective, if you see what I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Oh, you need a cup of tea, Michael. Shall we have a short break?
No, it's okay. Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for listening to us here at Planet Porky, myself, the Porkmeister, with a bit of a frog in my throat, I'm afraid. I'm not sure what it is. It could be the humidity. And, of course, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Now, Ms. Jones, I thought I'd got COVID again about 3 days ago, okay? So I just felt unwell, you know, and I thought, what's wrong with me? I thought, oh, it could be COVID. So I went into my medicine cabinet and got out a COVID testing kit, okay? And I went through all the procedures and all that. But guess what? Because it's like probably months since I last used the COVID testing kit, the fluid in the little plastic thing that you have to tip into the, you know, the inverted cup to dip your stick into, dip your stick, if you're...
Get your dipstick out.
Yeah, get your dipstick out, that's right, yeah.
Family show.
It had evaporated. There was no fluid in it.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you've got COVID kits in your house, go and check that there's fluid still.
What was the sell-by date on the box then?
Oh, I don't know, because I'd take them out of the box and just put them in a cup.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. They dried up. Do you know, I discovered something amazing, well, sort of, the other day, that you can buy these testing kits at the Till in Marks and Spencer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, did I? Till I saw them there. So I snapped up a few.
How many? I mean, sorry, how much?
Oh, they were a couple of quid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not expensive at all. I was quite surprised to see them there in the first place because I had assumed that they weren't available anymore.
No, I thought they'd sold out as well and not been producing more. But anyway, that's very interesting. I will go and get some and I will test myself. Although the following day, I felt really okay.
What were your symptoms then?
Oh, sickness, really. You know, headache and...
Nausea
and lethargy, terrible lethargy. You know, I wanted to lie down, all that kind of stuff. But that could...
They're coming up with new symptoms all the time, aren't they?
Yes, that's true.
You know, this could be COVID or that could be COVID. Yeah. And sort of adding to the list of ailments.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Now, Miss Jones, have you ever heard of a guy called Darius, somebody or other? The poor lad has been found dead, 41 years
old. Yeah. He was a pop idol. I think he was a pop idol contestant some years ago.
Yeah, I think he was, yeah. And isn't it terribly sad that a lot of these people are going to these reality shows, I think Love Island's one as well, end up having their lives really smashed up all over the place. We don't know yet how the lad Darius died, but it's another tragic story of somebody who was cast into the spotlight, suddenly became famous and then, you know, sadly perished.
I think it's a very dangerous dimension. Mm. Because they go from literally nowhere onto these what are no more than karaoke shows, after all.
Yeah.
It's like going down your local pub, getting up on a couple of orange boxes and belting out a song, and then suddenly being projected into the public eye when you've had no preparation for that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And you suddenly think you've made it. And you haven't done your 10,000 hours. You haven't done what the Beatles did, as you mentioned earlier. Yeah. Banging off to Hamburg, doing 5 shows a day, barely sleeping, barely eating, barely getting paid, writing your songs until your fingers bleed. Yeah. None of these people have done anything like that.
Yes.
They haven't put the hours in. They expect, and their expectations are very, very high, that just because they've been picked up and put on a reality TV show, that they now have fame and fortune.
Yeah.
And they kid themselves and they start to live to that inflated level. And then they get dumped from the show or the show closes, they leave and they're out there. And suddenly it's, well, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to pay the rent? I'll have to get a job as a cab driver or work in a bar. But they don't want to do that because now they, in their minds, they're famous and they can't stand the shame of having to go back to the real world.
Yeah.
So quite often, this story ends tragically because you've got somebody whose expectations were raised beyond reality, and they cannot come back down to earth. And the only way out for them, as they see it, is to check out. We, as you say, we don't know that Darius took his own life yet or anything like that. Mm. But what I'm saying is I wouldn't be at all surprised to hear it.
Yeah, well, it's very sad, isn't it, that life's got to... I know exactly what you mean. A few years ago, I was amazed. You know, I picked up a newspaper one day, Daily Mail, something like that, and on the front there's a picture of a postman. And I thought, I'm sure I recognise that guy. And it turned out to be an England footballer. And this was before the days when you could become a millionaire in your teens just by playing for Chelsea's third team. You know what I mean? You know, teenagers sign up now on salaries, ridiculous salaries of like £500,000 a year when they're 16 or something like that, you know. By the time they're 19 or 20, they're multimillionaires earning, oh, I don't know, up to £150,000 a week and all that. But this guy, and I can't remember his name. I think his first name was Neil. And I know he played for Nottingham Forest because I recognised him. He had literally got to the point that you're talking about. His career in football had run out. He'd done a bit of punditry, but that didn't take off. He got divorced, had to split whatever money he had and sell the house and all that. And he actually ended up becoming a postman. And I got tremendous respect for the guy. I thought, well, that's really something, because when somebody sees the postman walking up the drive and they realise, hang on, that looks like Neil, whatever his name was, you know, the England footballer, that's a terrible adjustment in life to have to make, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting thing, because in the old days, you might be Matt Munro, who was a bus conductor.
He was, yeah.
And so you're doing a normal job, and then suddenly somebody hears you sing somewhere and you get picked up, you get discovered, and then you get Don Black writing amazing songs for you, and you become globally famous doing the thing that exploits your personal talent. I think with footballers, the French have a saying, don't they? I can't remember the exact French for it, but it's to do with sportsmen dying two deaths.
Oh, right.
So they die the first death when they have to give up playing the sport that they love and which defines them.
Yeah.
And then they have to wait an awfully long time, usually, before they die their actual death, the real death that finally removes them from the living world.
Yes.
And those years in between are very difficult for many of them to cope with.
It is. And any sportsman who dies loses the adrenaline rush, you know what I mean? And that's why so many of them go into coaching, that kind of stuff. But footballers are so wealthy these days, they can always find something else to do, like, you know, buy a jet or a mansion or something like that. But there you go.
Yeah, we don't feel that sorry for them.
Well,
do we, no?
Not the modern ones. They're well cushioned. But certainly when I was growing up, 60s and 70s, you would actually meet ex-Everton footballers literally in the same stand as you, watching the game, you know, at Goodison Park and that kind of stuff, because they just weren't treated like celebrities. They'd spent all their life coming to training on the bus and all that kind of stuff. I know that goes back to the days when your dad was, you know, one of the most famous football reporters in this country, but it really did happen like that, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Dad was a footballer when I was born and for a few years into our childhood. But my uncle was a big star at Spurs, Cliff Jones. Yeah. And after his playing career ended, he opened a butcher's shop.
Yes. Yes, I can.
In North London. Yeah. You know, they went into the real world and they did proper jobs.
They did. Is your dad's friend Terry Venables still running a hotel in Spain?
Not anymore, no.
Oh, right. Because
no, he's still in Spain. He and Yvette still live in Spain, but he's not running a hotel now.
Oh, okay. Because I know he was, because somebody I know went out there and didn't realise it was Terry Venables' hotel, booked into this hotel and then did a double take, you know, in the dining room. I think that bloke serving the steak over there looks like Terry Venables. Oh, it is Terry Venables, you know. Those sort of things.
Yeah, not now, but it's like I stayed in a hotel in Dublin recently, the Clarence Hotel, not realising that it was owned by U2, and apparently they're in there all the time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You love that, don't you?
Just my luck that they weren't there the night I checked in.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we would have been up all night.
You would have been indeed. Now, you mentioned Don Black a minute ago as a songwriter. Funny you should mention his name, because I always like the start of James Bond films. I don't always watch them all the way through, but I always find the start very exciting, because the start comes before the titles, you know what I mean? And it's always action-packed, and it's either Roger Moore or Sean Connery or whatever, you know, smashing, explosive start to the films. So one came on the other night called No Time to Die. It was Pierce Brosnan, who I thought was one of the worst James Bonds. He was just so...
A bit smarmy, wasn't he?
Smarmy, shallow.
Yeah.
And for some unknown reason, the plots involving Pierce Brosnan were far too sexist, much more than all the others. It was just far too sexist. You know, how every woman swooned at his feet and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And
they overplayed his very limited masculinity, didn't they?
They did. And I thought to myself, well, maybe that was down to Pierce Brosnan. Maybe he felt that, you know, he was handsome enough, good-looking enough, and so irresistible to women that he wanted to push that in his role. And, you know, and as James Bond, you know, the women couldn't leave him alone and all that. Because without doubt, there was more of the, you know, sort of, what can I say, the simpering female in the Pierce Brosnan films than there was in any of the others I've seen. But anyway, that's getting away from it. The point is, I watched the explosive opening, and it was the one where, what was it? I think he, like, stole an aircraft or something like that, you know, he's shooting at it and all that. And then as the credits came up, I thought, I don't know who sung this song. And then I waited for the titles to get right round to sung by, and it was somebody I'd never heard of, but it was written and lyrics by Don Black.
Mm-hmm.
No Time
to Die. Yeah, I can't.
Do you remember that?
No Time to Die. That was, wasn't it Billie Eilish?
No, I don't think it was. I think she's
maybe
too
not.
Recent.
I can't remember. Answer an argument here that we were having yesterday as well.
Right.
I seem to remember, and I can easily be wrong, that Shirley Bassey recorded three Bond themes.
Yes.
So there was Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, and?
Now there's Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah.
And Goldfinger.
What was the other one?
Well, I'm just trying to think because Andy Strikes Like Thunderball.
Thunderball, was it Thunderball?
No, that was Tom Jones. I was just going to say Thunderball was...
Oh, well, why are you singing that one then when we're talking about Shirley Bassey?
I'm trying to eliminate them. The other one, Diamonds Are Forever.
That was Irish, yeah. Okay. The Living Daylights was one of my favourite. That was Aha. Do you remember that theme?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I love that. And, of course, Live and Let Die, McCartney's famous, which he always does at his live shows, with all the pyrotechnics, the fireworks going off left, right.
Yeah, that's right.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
I've always said that you can't really cover a McCartney original.
No, I don't.
But there's one band who did a brilliant cover version of that song, which is Guns N' Roses.
Oh, yeah.
Which is almost as good as McCartney's original.
Really? Yeah, I've never heard that.
Check it out.
Also, Duran Duran did one.
What was that one?
To Dance Into the Fire or something.
Oh, yeah.
A View to a Kill.
The one I hated, oh my God, Skyfall with the theme by Adele.
No, I thought that was quite a
ballad. Dreadful, because she cannot enunciate, darling. So the sky foul when it crumbles, and it's all a bit kind of, it's just lazy singing. I'm sorry. There's another example of Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah, but
I know she's a multimillionaire, and I know she's very successful, and she looks fantastic and all the rest of it. But, sorry, don't like her as a singer. Don't like Ed Sheeran either.
Blimey. Well, there you go. She's done something right, hasn't she? Now then, fish and chips take a battering from under 25s, okay?
Nice pun.
Yes. Just one in 14 under 25s rank fish and chips as their favourite takeaway, according to a poll. Well, I can tell you something. When I was growing up, or certainly in my teens, one in two people of my generation would have opted for fish and chips above everything else. How can our traditional dish have fallen so far down the pecking order of favourites for young people? I think it's a tragedy.
Because millennials and Gen Zs, as they call them, young people the age of my two youngest children, are much more nutritionally aware.
Mm.
And they know that it's a very unhealthy meal. There's about 600 calories in the average portion of fish and chips, 9.24 grams of fat per 100 grams. This is incredibly unhealthy, especially for somebody with your heart condition.
Yes.
It's unhealthy because, by most standards, because of the amount of oil involved in the deep frying and so on. Mm. Deep frying is unhealthy. Mm. We know that. As for cod, I'm told that all the cod liver oil is extracted before the cod is submitted for frying in a fish shop. Mm-hmm. So that food has no nutritional value whatsoever. The only nutritional value in a cod is its cod liver oil.
Well, how do you extract cod liver oil from cod?
Well, they take it out its liver, don't they? They take liver out and then they extract the oil from its liver.
Oh, golly, I don't like to think.
It's a bit like, you know, bananas, right?
Yes.
You know bananas, and they say, oh, eat bananas because the potassium content, right. You need to get your potassium content up. All of the potassium is in that little black bit at the end, the bit that we take off and chuck in the bin.
Really?
Yes, really. So if you don't eat that little black bit, you're not getting your potassium.
Did you see the exercise undertaken by some breakfast show presenter last week that we all peel our bananas the wrong way round? You're not supposed to.
I know, absolute rot, because yeah. I then tried to peel a banana the upside down. It doesn't work. You can't get into it.
Nonsense. I tell you what I do like about bananas. I love the smell of bananas. I often just buy a bunch of bananas if I'm shopping, you know, in a supermarket or something, not because I particularly want to eat them, but when I put them in my fruit bowl in my apartment, I can smell them more than I smell flowers. I think it's a lovely fragrance, honestly. Really love it.
Oh, are your pheromones playing up, dear?
Well, I don't know. Could be. Yeah, the old pheromones.
And you should try dabbing a bit of a banana behind your ears before you go out in the pool.
I'm not that desperate, Miss Jones.
Fed up, not hard up, right?
No, that's right. Listen, talking about food and all that, I read this story about this bloke who must be the most irresponsible father in the world. A champion competitive eater is training his teenage daughter to take on huge feasts as well. John Dawes, 43, known as the Beast, and 18-year-old Katie eat thousands of calories a day but take long walks to burn them off. What father would teach his daughter to practice eating 10 hamburgers a minute to enter competitive eating? Have I gone mad?
Yeah. No, they have. Yeah, it's disgusting. This is the guy that eats 50 chicken nuggets in 3 minutes 44 seconds.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that scene in the film Matilda. Do you remember when Miss Trunchbull, the headmistress of the school, makes the kid, the boy kid, eat a vast chocolate cake that's about the size of her desk. Mm. She makes him eat it in the hall in front of all the kids.
No, I've not seen
to that. The point that he is almost sick. She forces him to eat the whole thing. Mm. It's disgusting. Overeating of any kind is disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody ought to remind him that there's a shortage on.
Well, the shortage of food, but also, I mean, you start overloading your system like that, it's got to be medically dangerous. If you overload your system with alcohol or anything else, it's dangerous. So I think he's not. Getting back to fish and chips, by the way, I'm sorry I should have mentioned this when we were talking about it. If I'm in town or if I'm out and all that, and it's a Friday, I like going to Wetherspoons for fish and chips because they are the biggest fish and chip shop in the world on Fridays, where they do, like, you know, Friday's a special fish and chip day. I think Thursday's curry day or something like that. But I'm a big fan of Wetherspoons, and I'm a big fan of the guy who runs it, Tim Martin. Anyway, Tim and I had been in contact by text about, you know, various issues about pubs and trying to keep the pubs alive and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, oh, I must go and get my fish and chips. So I went in there. So I took a picture of my fish and chips with bread and butter, okay, and a glass of wine. And I got like 88,000 responses, you know, in terms of hits and all that. So it's all very well for the kids, you know, to say, oh, we don't like fish and chips and all that kind of thing. But believe me, it's still one of Britain's most popular meals, and long may it last. I don't like to think of a fish having a liver. I thought when I was eating my, you know, cod, it was just like the meat of the fish. I didn't realise there were innards and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Well, of course. I mean, the cod that you buy in a fish shop or get in a restaurant, I suppose, is a fillet, isn't
yes,
it?
Exactly.
It's not actually the whole fish. Because I don't know if you've ever seen a cod, but they're gigantic things.
Are they? Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're huge.
Oh, I see. So one cod might produce four fillets or something like that.
Well, I think even more than that. Mm-hmm. I once saw a tuna fish landed on a beach in Greece when I was on holiday.
Yeah.
And this, I'm not joking, this tuna fish was about the size of a bus, a double-decker bus. It was massive.
Never heard of a fish the size of a double-decker bus. Miss Jones.
I think they're mostly called whales.
I think they are called whales. Look, just before we go, I read with sorrow that there's a cinema chain called Cineworld about to go bust, terrible debts, you know, like $4 million debt, something like that, because people have stopped going back to the cinema after the pandemic. If all the cinemas close down, I'll miss it greatly. I love the experience of going to a cinema in the dark, watching a film, particularly these days where you can pay for an armchair seat and take a glass of wine to your seat with you. Are you a great cinema fan yourself?
I must admit, in recent years, I've not been a great cinema goer, although I did go the other day with my son to see the Elvis film called Elvis, starring Austin Butler, which is the most extraordinary film. Yeah. It's a Baz Luhrmann film. It's so it's a bit of a fantasy, but it is extremely accurate in the way it portrays the story of the so-called Colonel Tom Parker, took over Elvis's career and so on. It's a tragic story.
Yes.
But it was a really nice experience.
Yes.
But it wasn't full. There were only about half a dozen of us in the cinema on a Sunday afternoon. And the thing that really irritates me about cinema going is people eating. I don't want to sit there with people's toffee foils rustling in my ear people's crunching popcorn and spilling it all over the floor and all this. I just don't like people's eating habits in cinemas. So from that point of view, I'm quite happy to watch a film at home.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I used to really treat myself. Before I got diabetes, I would go into the pick and mix, you know, shop in the foyer, and I would get everything, licorice all sorts, those long red bits of licorice, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God. No wonder you got diabetes.
Exactly. Smarties, Rolos, I mean, you name it, you know.
Oh, I tell you my favourite ones, those pink shrimp.
Oh, lovely. And bananas.
Love those shrimps. I hate those. Don't like bananas. No, no. There you go with the bananas again. The other ones I really, really love, milk bottles.
Milk bottles, I love those as well, particularly the tangy ones, and raisins and peanuts coated in chocolate. So I'd put all these into my bag. It cost about £4. And it would literally take me the whole, and the little, you know, the little crocodiles, the jelly ones, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. No wonder your teeth are falling out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there we are. It was a great experience. Well, there we are then, Miss Jones. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you to our audience for having joined us again. Life on Planet Porky, of course, never stops. It goes on. And we'll be back with you this time next week. He was working on a building site from the age of 13. He didn't learn to read or write until he was 28. He was addicted to heroin for 20 years, causing the loss of his teeth, and said cycling, that was pedalling from 8 a.m. until 11 p.m. every day for months, helped him get clean. I mean, that's quite a complicated man, isn't it?
That is a very complicated man, but I don't see how anybody could spend that long in the saddle day after day after day without causing all kinds of other problems, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I totally.
But it is a family show.
Yeah, it is a family show. Now there's Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah.
And Goldfinger.
What was the other one?
Well, I'm just trying to think, because Andy Strikes Like Thunderball.
Thunderball, was it Thunderball?
No, that was Tom Jones. I was just going to say, Thunderball was...
Oh, well, why are you singing that one then, when
because
we're talking about Shirley Bassey?
I'm trying to eliminate them. The other one, Diamonds Are Forever. I don't like to think of a fish having a liver. I thought when I was eating my, you know, cod, it was just like the meat of the fish. I didn't realise there were innards and all that kind of stuff, you know?
You should try dabbing a bit of a banana behind your ears before you go out in the pool.
I'm not that desperate, Miss Jones.
Fed up, not hard up, right?
No, that's right.